Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio live from the staging area for Freedom and Liberty, Spokane, Washington, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And this indeed is the year we take our freedom back. I started Patriot Radio as a mission because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as James 4:17 admonishes us, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. Once again, Patriot Radio is brought to you by Coins Plus, broadcasting live from the clock tower on North Division. Check Coins Plus out for all of your coin needs. And also, they give you advice and do a lot of other things besides that. So check them out if you get the chance. Your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. This is one of the most, I read this article today. This is one of the most disturbing things I think I've read in a while. The World Trade Organization has ruled that U.S. shoppers have no right to know where their food comes from or what they're eating. I'm going to say that again. The World Trade Organization has decided that U.S. shoppers have no right to know what they eat or where their food is coming from. That's right. The World Trade Organization ruled that America's popular country of origin labeling law, which was, I think, enacted back in 2008, violates global trade standards because it erects a trade barrier to U.S. meat imports from countries like Canada and Mexico. Because they've sold horse meat before, for goodness sakes. Why do you think this stuff was enacted? And so now we have, and this is what everybody was afraid of, we have these extranational organizations deciding what U.S. law is. That is wrong. That is exactly what we said was going to happen. It's exactly what many people predicted was going to happen. And here we have it in reality. The World Trade Organization is deciding something I think it's very near and dear to everyone's heart, what you put in your body as far as food is concerned, and violating a basic principle that people have the right to know where their food comes from. Because there have been abuses. And people need to make an informed choice. But oh no, as the global government becomes more entrenched, you're going to see more and more of this stuff. The World Trade Organization literally declaring one of our laws invalid. Unbelievable. Here's the interesting part, too. This is, you know, we talk about food freedom. This is an issue that crosses party lines. In fact, one survey, and this is on Fox Business, where the article is. If you guys want to check that out, I'll make sure I put it up on the Facebook page. But this article very clearly says that 9 out of 10 Americans support this American law that says country of origin on the label. 9 out of 10. Food freedom crosses party lines. Food freedom is an American thing. And the fact that the global government is doing this is also crossing party lines. And folks, we have to band together to stop this stuff. Just like the Fast Track Trade Authority, which is going to give away our sovereignty, you will see more and more and more of this stuff as it gets negotiated and we lose our sovereignty. And that is going to affect everybody. Left, right, middle, everybody. We gotta stop the loyalism to specific parties, regardless of what they believe. We gotta be loyal to the truth, because loyalty to the truth is loyalty to God, and that is the American principle. Also on the international front, second volcano explodes down in Chile. People are calling it an apocalyptic sky down there. You know, I bring up the volcano, you know, eruptions around the world because just one volcano eruption essentially does away with all of this carbon nonsense, because those volcanoes emit way more carbon and other chemicals and other gases into the atmosphere than we ever could through our cars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, here in America. And the fact of the matter is that prosperity is actually what brings a cleaner environment. So my bottom line on this issue, is anytime somebody says, oh, well, we need to do all these cap and trade things and we need to do all these massive restrictions on your personal liberties for the sake of protecting the environment, say, well, the volcano just undid that. So, and it kind of proves you wrong, too, by the way, because all these volcanoes going off are putting out far more carbon emissions than we are as human beings. And so it kind of debunks the theory of man-made global warming all in one fell swoop. And yet, our governor today on the national front announced an agreement with California in regards to setting up what is eventually going to become a cap and trade scheme between the two states, Washington and California. After global warming has been conclusively disproven. So, as we continue to hear these things, educate your friends and neighbors on what really is going on. Also on the national front, $472 billion in new taxes on the national front. $472 billion in new taxes in the federal government. Are we going to cut spending? No, we're not going to cut spending. Of course not. We're just going to keep spending, keep getting into debt, because that's part and parcel of what this global agenda is all about. And that's to enslave you and me and take away our freedoms step by step, gradually. And if we don't wake up and we don't get involved and we don't stop it at the local level and state level, it's going to continue its march. Just like we heard about with the World Trade Organization a couple minutes ago. It's exactly what's going on. Exactly what's going on. On the regional front, Gallus, Oregon continues to be a hotbed right now of contention between the Bureau of Land Management and some local miners up there who have had their claims continuously mined for over 100 years before BLM ever even existed. That's a preemptive property right, highest level of property right there is, and yet the BLM wants them to abandon the claim, take all their equipment off, remove the structures, which, if you abandon the claim, then does give them jurisdiction. It does give them jurisdiction, and that's the problem. That's the problem. They want to get their hooks in these guys. So the Oath Keepers have been down there standing watch for a long time. We're going to have more on that, I hope. We're trying to get some information out of the folks down there in Gallus, Oregon. We've been trying for 2 weeks to get some information out so we can start putting out some press releases and rallying some folks. So if you know anybody down there, please let them know. Hey, we've been trying to get a hold of them, trying to get some information from them. And as soon as I get that information, I'll make sure we get it up on Patriot Radio's Facebook page so you can take action. You can educate your friends and neighbors on that very, very important property rights issue. Also on the regional front, Washington State today, there was a budget announcement, budget forecast. We have $400 million more than we thought we did. So I'm going to add this up for you. We have $3.4 billion more than we had last biennium, and they still want to talk about raising taxes. I have an idea. How about instead of raising taxes, we give our businesses, we give our citizens some tax relief and cut taxes instead of spending our children or grandchildren into oblivion. Also on the regional front, Spokesman Review, once again, smearing people in their wonderful rag of a paper. Shram Hadian made the front page today, and Shram Hadian, as many of you know, is a former Muslim. He lived in Iran. He's now a Christian pastor, preaching all over the United States and in Canada about what Islam is really about and about how not to yoke with Islam. And very interesting, the Spokesman Review has taken today to smear him on the front page, while at the same time he was able in Idaho to rally a big group of Idaho legislators to vote against a child support international treaty bill that would have obligated Idaho to be part of that treaty. Now, we had something similar here in Washington, and I was able to amend it to actually have some anti-Sharia law language put in there, but it's more than that. It's anti-foreign law language put in there that our courts can't enforce it, and it actually passed, was signed into law by the governor. In Idaho, they attempted to kill the bill outright, and I want to give some kudos to the following legislators who voted no on that bill: Representative Barbieri, Moyle, Scott, Andrus, Boyle, Cheatham, Dixon, Gestrin, Harris, Holtzclaw, McMillan, Mendive, Miller, Monks, Nate, Nielsen, Palmer, Redmond, Shepard, and Sims. Gentlemen and ladies, thank you very much for your principled stand in Idaho. And not to be outdone, in the Idaho Senate, only two senators voted no. Senator Nuxall, thank you very much, Senator Nuxall. You've done a great job over there in Idaho holding the line. And also, Senator Brent Regan, who was filling in for Senator Steve Vick on that vote. And Brent Regan, a citizen who went down there to make sure that there was a good vote of no on that bill. But that's why they're smearing Sharam Haidian, because Sharam rallied all these Idaho legislators and educated them on this issue so that they did vote no. And a special thank you to Pastor Sharam Haidian for his wonderful work of principle that he's doing in the Spokane area. Also on the regional front, a Freedom Agenda victory yesterday as the governor signed into law my bill, House Bill 1943, which reformed electronic monitoring. This is the thing we've been talking about for over a year, where you literally had these criminals cutting their bracelets off on a Friday because they knew nobody would monitor them over the weekend and going on a crime spree. One resulted in a murder. One resulted in the Victoria Clipper actually being stolen. Well, we finally got those substantive reforms, some of the biggest reforms in the history of the state of Washington, signed into law just yesterday by the governor. And thanks to you and the grassroots, and also thanks to the Freedom Foundation, we were able to get that passed. That's what we can do when we work together. Also, on the local front, the fix is in as the county commissioners decide who's going to be the CEO of Spokane County. Lo and behold, it might be one of a former commissioner, if he resigns anyway, Commissioner Todd Mielke. And as more information is coming out on this, a complaint has been filed with the prosecutor's office in Spokane County, which has now been forwarded to the attorney general's office, alleging that some ethical violations occurred because it was if Commissioner Mielke was setting himself up as a sitting commissioner to be the CEO of Spokane County. Now, we just had a corruption scandal break in the House of Representatives with the resignation of Susan Fagan. We don't need to be going there again. We need to be policing our own. So I look forward to more information coming out on this, but as it stands, the perception among the public that I'm talking to anyway is that this is not an objective pick. It is not an objective, not a thoroughly and diligently done process, but in fact that the fix is in. So keep your eyes on that, and that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Once again, thank you to everybody out there for praying for the show. Make sure you go to Patriot Radio on Facebook. Check us out there. We have a lot of information and articles and how you can get involved. And speaking of patriots, one of my very favorite guests today on Patriot Radio is Joel Skousen, the author A Strategic Relocation, and the weekly World Affairs Brief, which I read every week. Really appreciate that because it really hones down what the truth is out there among all the disinformation. Joel, thanks for joining me once again on Patriot Radio.
It's great to be with you, Matt. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, let's jump right into Jade Helm. There's been a lot out there about Jade Helm. All I know is a military guy myself that trained for combat, that you train as you fight, and the reasons they're giving about why they're doing this massive training exercise really don't wash with the train as you fight if they're indeed deploying overseas. What's your take on this, and educate the listeners on what you know?
Before I go there, Matt, I want to take this opportunity just to comment or add something to you about the Trans-Pacific Partnership that you mentioned. It's a very important subject and something I'll be covering in next week's brief. There has been leaked language related to that showing that there's a reason for it being secret and why Congress has not been able to read it, and what congressmen have been able to read some of the bill for limited periods of time is not the actual final version of it. The two things that make this particularly pernicious and dangerous is that it's supposed to be a living agreement now, which means that you're going to establish a permanent bureaucracy, a permanent council for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and they're going to be able to amend both the law and the numbers of participants in the agreement, meaning that once you pass through the fast-track approach to the agreement, which they won't have read, it's going to set up a permanent EU-like bureaucracy. This is the emerging global government, and they're going to be able to change the provisions of the agreement, as well as add new nations so they can build this into a world government if we allow this Trans-Pacific Partnership to pass. So this is very serious, very diabolical, and that's why it's secret. I don't know if you'd covered this before in your other coverage of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but this is the most dangerous aspect of it in my estimation.
Well, it completely takes away our sovereignty here in the United States, and that's what they've been wanting to do. That's what they've been working toward for a long time. And what's sad is you have conservatives and self-proclaimed Republicans actually voting for this and helping to get it forward. And one of the most shocking, in my opinion, was Rand Paul's actual support for some of this. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, he said he spent 45 minutes, reading the text. He had his staff had to sign in. They had to sign a confidentiality agreement. And there's another problem with that. There is no law on the books that gives anyone the right to basically say this is a restricted document that you can't talk about. There is no law restricting congressmen to talk about what they read about a bill. And so there is a sub rosa government that, you know, people like Ron Paul are going along with by not protesting and not breaking this agreement and by not talking about it. But I don't think, as he suspects, that he got to see the final agreement, and I'm sure he didn't, because in the first place, you can't read an 800-page document in 45 minutes and come away with the fine legal language, the fine print that is going to do the implementation. And if they change the language at the last minute, no one's going to know about these living document provisions, and I think those are the secret changes that are going to go in that no one will know about until they pass the bill, like in Obamacare, as Nancy Pelosi said. We've got to pass the bill so we can see what's in it.
And you're exactly right. That's exactly what they do. They do it not only in Washington, D.C. They'll do it in Olympia. We'll have 15 minutes literally to review a 35-page bill. I mean, it's nowhere near 800, and it's already difficult to try and skim through that and catch what they've changed. And usually they change it in the definition section. They'll make some minor change, but that changes the entire context, meaning, and scope of a bill like that. And I think you're absolutely right. They're trying to ram this through so that they have this power, and then it will never be repealed.
Yeah, and it's going to have the power to morph into a regional global government like the EU, and we're going to be stuck with it. And it will never, go away. So this is very dangerous. We really need to sound the alarm on this, as you're doing. So let me go to Jade Helm now. You know, I'm caught between a problem here, and Jade Helm is a problem. It is a major escalation in preparing military people to get ready for taking down dissidents, extracting people, shipping them across the nation, blending in with people. And believe me, as you said, this is absolutely inappropriate as a training for going overseas, because you can't practice blending in to Houston, Texas, and have that translate to Mexico City. I mean, American soldiers can't blend in, even in civilian clothes in Mexican cities. So it does no good to practice blending in American cities in civilian clothes in an operation unless you're actually planning, as you said, train for what you do someday. Now, that said, none of our soldiers are being told the purpose of this. They have to surmise it just like we are doing. Somebody at the very top who's designing these things is a globalist, is preparing for militarization of martial law, but it's years off. I don't think there's any way that Jade Helm is going to turn into a martial law scenario. I think it's merely an expansion of the preparatory process that has been going on. And as I say, they have practiced, and we have documents, videotapes of military and law enforcement rounding up people. Now, they do this in the military. Even when I was back in the military, you had a mock prison camp and you put people in prison, but this was to train you to withstand the type of interrogation. Now the training is really about rounding up civilians and putting them in temporary custody and then marching them off to a camp, and then Jade Helm escalates that, so where you're now shipping them across the country. So they're getting the military prepared to extract people from these dissident areas in Utah, Texas, and California and take them out to Florida, as well as there are many other aspects of this. But I will say that none of the military people are getting a script that even hints at martial law. And so this is not ending up in that. And, you know, I've had military people say, hey, look, there's nothing wrong with Jade Helm. You know, we have never been told that we're practicing for martial law. Well, of course not. They're never going to tell you that you're practicing for arresting civilians or taking away guns. They're just going to do it in the name of foreign practice, and then they're going to have people trained, and when they give the order, you'll be expected to obey. But I don't think it's coming anytime soon, and I don't think it can come without a major excuse like war. Remember that martial law requires a complete slowdown of the economy. You control everybody's movements, nothing. Everything goes at about one-tenth the pace. The economy would really go down fast. If they tried to pull a martial law scenario based upon social unrest or race riots or any other flimsy excuse, the government would get the blame. They would be, in fact, it would convince millions of people there really is a conspiracy. So I think they're going to wait till war before you see any of these real preparations for militarization of police, martial law, and the rounding up of civilians take place, because war is the magic bullet that covers all of that and lets the leaders, the evil leaders who are planning these things, walk away still the heroes. They can still say, we're doing this because of the war, and play upon people's patriotism.
Typically in the military, when you'll do squad-level training, you'll do maybe platoon-level training off of military reservations in national parks or state parks. One of the things, though, that when you do those kind of trainings, you're training for basic skills, survival, sometimes cross-country skiing, whatever it is, or hiking, whatever. You train, but you always keep a very low profile so you don't alarm the public. That was something that we took very, very seriously, and I know many other people that have trained that way have done it. On occasion, it would get bigger than individual squad or platoon training. It'd be company-level training. But this Jade Helm exercise is essentially a division or regimental-level training exercise. Why do you think they're doing such a big one right now? Because clearly this is way out of the norm of what the Special Forces normally does in combat units that are getting ready to deploy normally do. Why would they do this now off U.S. reservations? It seems to me to mean that a timeline is kind of moving up a little bit faster. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the timeline. They're stuck with the timeline. You can't justify any of these draconian measures until war comes. What is accelerating, though, is the degree in which they're going in the face of the public and expecting the public to kowtow. I mean, this really actually has been increasing over the past decade. The more they have the helicopters flying at night, blanks being fired, scaring people to death, not warning them in advance of what's coming, they're getting people accustomed in the United States to having the presence of military descending on a city and without notice and telling them that it's an exercise. Now, someday when they descend on a city and start rounding up people, you know, a lot of people stand back and say, oh, what did those guys do? Boy, they must have been doing something terrible for the military to be rounding them up. And they'll be told they're criminals, et cetera. But, you know, we need to train the American people that they've got to demand their rights. They've got to mass against these and demand if their neighbors are being picked up. What's the process? You know, has there been a warrant issued? And demand to see those warrants. But unfortunately, after the Boston Marathon bombing fiasco, when you had APCs and other militarized vehicles running through the streets, and you had people being rousted out of their homes with hands over their head without a warrant, and everybody complied, Matt. Nobody resisted. It's amazing what an emergency situation will cause people to cede in terms of rights and liberties and constitutional protections.
How do we get folks to realize this is real and we need to do something now? Because it seems like a lot of folks are just too busy just trying to keep up with their lives, keep up with making a living if they still have a job, or maybe they only have a part-time job left. They're just trying to keep up. How do we educate folks on that? It seems very difficult because these, for me and you, I mean, I look at something like that on television. I say, there it is. There's the evidence everybody's been asking for right in front of your eyes in color on HDTV. And yet nothing seems to change.
Well, in the first place, it doesn't affect them personally, so it's hard to get people motivated. If the exercise were happening in Spokane, it would get people in Spokane a little bit up in arms, as it has in Tallahassee or other places where these low-flying helicopters and machine guns have been popping off rounds. And that. But, you know, they're very careful. They're very smart not to alert massive amounts of people to the problem. And, you know, you've got to remember we're at a disadvantage in the sense that none of these people have admitted that there is any ill intent in this stuff. They always have a rational excuse to say that this is for training overseas, this is for terrorism training. And there's no way actually to prove. You and I can surmise, we can put together the evidence from our background, and we can say on the radio and on the air what we believe is going down. But, you know, they've got excuses. And if you ever tried to force their hand to excuse these, I mean, they would come out with these benign excuses to explain it all away. They have explained it away excuses for the Kennedy assassination, for 9/11, for all of these massive government black operations. And, you know, it's interesting how many military people I've talked to who believe those excuses. It's really sad because they know that if they go public, if they really start to fight their own things, they're going to, you know, be brought up on a military justice charge and criticizing the military. Now, let me just say before we go on further on Jade Helm, the issues of hype that are really bad here that are getting our legitimate concerns discredited are the stories, for example, linking Jade Helm to the 5 Walmart store closings or to shackled prison railroad cars coming out of Gundersen Steel in Portland, Oregon. These are bogus stories that are planted, I think, by government disinformation experts in order to make our concerns about Jade Helm a laughingstock. They plant bogus stories about false conspiracies in order to discredit true conspiracies. The reason the 5 Walmart stores were closed was not because of plumbing problems. Those were excuses the company used. They were false excuses. They were actually retaliation for labor unrest in those 5 stores. Those are the 5 stores where the workers organized in cost shutdowns and protests and demanded higher wages and other benefit increases. And Walmart retaliated against them by concocting an excuse of major plumbing problems to shut down the stores. And the proof that they were retaliating against the workers is that they violated the normal code of layoffs. In layoffs, if a store has a problem that has to shut for a few weeks or a few months, they always give the existing workers priority in hiring back. They didn't do that in these 5 stores. Instead, every one of the employees has to apply for work as a new employee, which means they're allowed to discriminate then against them and keep them from being hired back. So the whole story is about underground tunnels coming up in Walmart stores and then being taken over by FEMA or by the military as part of Jade Helm is false. And we need to be very, very careful about, you know, passing along these kinds of bogus stories that really get passed along within the conservative community. Because, you know, when they tell other members of their family about it as evidence that of proof of bad intent of government, and it gets discredited, their entire story about our concern for our liberty gets discredited.
I completely agree with you. We have to do our own research, our own investigation, confirm sources, make sure we have primary source documents backing up our contentions. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it was very clear that the plumbing issue was not the real issue. I mean, that was fairly quickly shown to be not true, or at least deception.
That's right.
But to go beyond that, I think, is where the, like you said, where the problem is. And we also have to be beyond reproach when we try to present this stuff on the internet, because otherwise, like you said, we do get discredited and we actually become a tool of disinformation ourselves when we do that.
That's right. So that's one of the things I try to do in my World Affairs Brief every week, because I do spend a considerable amount of time as well as exposing what I think are true conspiracy facts about the globalist agenda. I try to debunk the ones that I think are false or hyped up so that we are very careful. And, you know, there's even outfits out there, one place called not World Net Daily, but World News Daily Report. It's meant to imitate World Net Daily, that specifically puts out what they call in the name of satire, stories that are crafted to be so true thing that you can't hardly detect they've been falsified. They put out a story a couple of weeks ago about a CIA vehicle that was caught with cocaine in it coming across the Mexican border, and how the CIA disowned uh, or dis, disavowed any relationship to them, even though that it was proven that the vehicle was owned by the CIA. And, you know, this is not satire. You know, satire is supposed to be humor. Satire is supposed to be over the top, so it's very obvious. You know, they have other stories on the site about some woman mating with an alien. That's obviously satire. But they're really trying to play to the people who believe in conspiracy and get them to repeat things that can be discredited as a forgery or a satire. And then the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. The true information about CIA being involved in drug importation with Mexico, which is fact, which has been proven through numerous other examples, is thrown out as a falsehood along with that. It's what they did with the George Bush story, for example. You know, he had gone AWOL from his training in as a reserve pilot in the Air Force, and there was evidence of that, that he had got this exemption when he went in the Air Force just because of his relationship to his father, and then he never attended any reserve meetings, et cetera. And so, you know, the establishment created a forged document reporting that his commanding officer, affirming that he has been in violation of his agreement and admitting that he, you know, had not been attending his reserve meetings. And so the conservatives rejoiced, here's proof. Or not the conservatives, the constitutional conservatives who suspected that George Bush was a, you know, plant within the movement, suspected here's real evidence that George Bush is corrupt. And this is George W. Bush we're talking about. And then the establishment reveals that the letter was a forgery. And so because the letter's a forgery, and they created the forgery, they ought to know, the story of the letter gets discredited too. And it's a very slick tactic of how to destroy truth is to put it out as a true story and then to get it declared as a forgery, and therefore the content gets destroyed along with the forged letter.
This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from Spokane, Washington, with my guest today, Joel Skousen, author of Strategic Relocation and the Weekly World Affairs Brief. Check it out. I actually read it every week because it is a great source of debunking disinformation. You know, I hear that from a lot of people out there that you don't know what's true and what's not. World Affairs Brief helps you discern what's true and what's not. Well, Joel, let's switch gears just a little bit. Russia and China have been doing some military exercises together on a pretty large scale recently, and their relationship seems to be getting tighter and tighter and closer and closer. Explain what that means and the implications for the listeners.
Well, it's been my long geopolitical theory that Russia and China are adversaries ultimately, but are in a temporary alliance to take down the West. They are both preparing for nuclear war with the West, building massive weapons of mass destruction, new missile systems. China's just reported that they've MIRV'd their first missiles, putting multiple, MIRV is multiple independent reentry vehicles or warheads, multiple warheads. And at the same time, the United States just removed all of the three warheads on our MIRV missiles, our Minuteman III's, and replaced them with a single warhead. And some of those have been replaced with conventional warheads. So we are continuing to comply with treaties that Russia has already said, hey, we're not complying with anymore. We're abandoning this. Russia does not let any of our inspectors into its nuclear facilities anymore, while we still allow Russian inspectors into ours. In other words, we're going through unilateral disarmament at the same time that Russia and China are building for this next war. So having military exercise between Russia and China is a sign that they are, in fact, knitting together their militaries in preparation for eventually going up against the West. Now, I do not believe this is imminent, Matt. I think that Russia and China are still about at least 5 years out towards building up sufficient modern-day weapon systems. They both need to reestablish their blue water navies to be able to control the vast ocean territories if you're going to conquer the Western world. And they've got, you know, none of their weapon systems, their major first-line weapon systems, are scheduled to come online until the beginning of next decade, 20, 21, 22, and 23, including new aircraft carriers, new fighter bombers, new stealth missiles, hypersonic missiles, and they're still ultimately worried about U.S. secret weapons programs and how much preparation is enough to take on the West. So it's something that I'm very concerned about. I think of even more concern than the military exercises is the fact that China is getting very aggressive, and the U.S. is now pretending to take a hardline stand against China, but it's only pretend, in the sense that they claim, one, this pivot, we're going to pivot more military forces to the Far East, and of course China goes apoplectic about any response, military response, to their growing aggressiveness. But to show that it's only talk and not a fact, you know, China in the Spratly Islands disputed there in the Far East is building a runway on a reef by bringing in lots of material and rock and building up a runway. They really need a Ring of Pearls type of military bases to project war and to conquer these territories. You can't send out a fleet hundreds of miles from Chinese ports and expect to refuel them and repair them. You have to have a String of Pearls type of bases of operations, both airfields and naval facilities. And they're building one in the Vietnam territorial waters. They're building one in the Spratlys. And the U.S. is now sending military patrols into the areas to supposedly counter this Chinese aggression. But notice what they say. We are not going to get any closer than the 12-mile limit to the Spratly Islands. Now, the 12-mile limit is the international standard for recognition of sovereignty. What they're basically saying is we're going to counter China, but we're recognizing their tacit ownership of the island by staying 12 miles away.
Now,
you can't interdict the Chinese. You can't stop them, and they have no intention to. They're simply giving the impression to the world that we're standing up to China when they're not. In fact, the U.S. continues to schedule military exercises with Chinese to invite them into our military exercises so they can eavesdrop on our communications. And this is a facade. Even worse is what's going on with North Korea. I mean, look at the dichotomy between how the U.S. treats North Korea with great permissiveness and the hostile way in which they've always treated Iran. It doesn't even have a nuclear program yet. It's proven it doesn't have certainly a nuclear weapon yet, and hasn't tested a nuclear weapon. And yet we threaten its very existence with military options, with regime change. North Korea has several weapons. They've tested them. They have the missiles to deliver them. And we say there's no military option on the table for North Korea. There's no regime change required. And we're going to continue to negotiate with China to try to increase sanctions on North Korea. Well, China is the patron saint of North Korea. China's the one that helps North Korea bypass any sanctions. And they've always been paper sanctions. North Korea has always violated every one of the agreements with the West about abandoning its nuclear program, and the West still goes through with shipping oil to them, to shipping food supplies to them, even when they renege on the agreement. And then to top it all, the U.S. finally announced that we may be beyond being able to stop North Korea. Well, of course you're beyond. That permissive policy was done on purpose so that now they can say, now it's too late. Same thing with Russia and China. We could have stopped the technology transfers of nuclear weapons, of MIRV missiles and all those things to Russia and China. We didn't, and now it's too late. And suddenly they say, we've got a problem. Well, our Western governments are in collusion, and not in collusion in the sense that they're working in knowing collusion with the Russian and Chinese, but they have a globalist agenda of building these enemies. My geopolitical theory says the purpose of building Russia and China as lethal nuclear enemies is to have a third world war someday where our nuclear forces get attacked by Russia and China. Our U.S. government will not defend against that initial attack, but will use it as an excuse to goad Americans into accepting a militarized global government as the solution to prosecute the war. And they can only do that if they've allowed our military forces to be preemptively struck by nuclear weapons so that they can come out of their bunkers and say, wow, we're without a military now. Our only solution is to join in a global military in order to prosecute this war. So I think that's where we're headed, Matt. It's a very serious thing, and people will see over the next 5 years that as Russia and China get more and more aggressive, that the U.S. will continue to wring its hands, just like the West did in World War II as Nazi Germany was getting more aggressive. And they were permissive with it. They continued to allow it to build its weapon systems. failed to interdict until it was too late.
One of the points that I think you bring up that, the listeners need to hear is the fact that the Chinese do not have a large enough blue water navy right now to really do much at this point. And that's something that we need to be watching, because as that begins to build, I think that that gives us a little bit of an idea, at least in very general terms, of the timeline and when something might happen. As they build their blue water navy and build it and eventually get to a point where they actually can project power and force, that actually is a signal that we're pretty close to something potentially happening. And
that's
if you
right.
could explain that to the listeners. Yeah.
Well, that is a ways away. You know, China intends, here's what I think is going to happen. Russia will and China will intend to neuter the United States military forces, the only forces capable of stopping them, with a preemptive nuclear strike. I think China will then take all of the island the chain of islands from Japan through the Philippines, clear down to Australia, in a ring of protection there. And we'll see those islands fall in the first months of the war. And Russia will then start to move into all of the former eastern states. That's why the stealth invasion of Ukraine is going on, so they have a position there. We will see, before the next 5 years are out, you'll see a stealth invasion in like manner of the Balkans. The Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And NATO will protest. They'll wring its hands. They'll have a little bit of troop build up, as we did prior to World War II, but they'll let it continue. But at some point, as I say, I think the trigger of World War III will be North Korea. I think that's the only reason to explain why the U.S. treats North Korea so differently than Iran, even though it's much more dangerous. They know it's going to be the trigger event to start the war. They're preserving it by not stopping its nuclear program. So when your listeners see North Korea attack South Korea, I think we're probably within a week of World War III. And so that's the time to have your preparations in place. I think because we have major nuclear targets like Seattle with its Trident missile base, submarine missile base there, as well as all the other military facilities in the Puget Sound areas, things are going to be a massive amount of fallout coming this back the Spokane way if the westerly flows are consistent. So I think it is important for people, even though they're not going to be subject to nuclear blast directly, unless it's Fairchild Air Force Base itself, which is the secondary nuclear target, they still will be subject to fallout. And that's why I've always not only warned people about this upcoming war, I've tried to warn them they can prepare. This is not a doomsday, end-of-the-world scenario. The world can survive. The Russians and Chinese are certainly planning to survive nuclear war, and we ought to, too. Our government is planning to survive. That's why they're building these deep underground bunkers, not for terrorism, but for that. But in terms of timing, you know, you've got to look at this blue water navy. Both Russia and China are in a major building position now. They're building aircraft carriers. They're building frigates. They're building submarines, ballistic missile submarines. I mean, they're not doing these for defensive purposes. These are offensive weapons. And they're putting all these weapons either on mobile rails or in underground tunnels where they're safe from being targeted from nuclear attack. Whereas ours are out in open silos, they will be targeted and I think destroyed in the opening salvo that comes.
Let's shift gears back to ISIS if we can for a second. Heard a lot about that, and especially in connection with Jade Helm, there's a lot of buzz in some of the intelligence community, actually, in the southwestern United States, that they're literally on the cusp of an attack, an ISIS attack or ISIS sympathizer attack that's going to happen. What is your thought on the legitimacy of that, A, and B, there's this ISIS camp supposedly on the other side of the border in Mexico? Seems like that might be a cover for something else and not really what it claims to be. What are your thoughts, and what is the information you can share with listeners on those two things?
Well, I think it's very important to understand that, and I'll be frank, that ISIS is a government creation of black operations, of U.S. and British intelligence. And although I don't have time with your listeners to go through all the evidence I have that this is a staged operation, It is the government will continue to put out ISIS as a threat. You know, you hardly ever hear about Al-Qaeda anymore. It used to be that Al-Qaeda was everything. That was the threat. And all of a sudden it turned to ISIS. Now, how did ISIS suddenly get bigger than Al-Qaeda and suddenly be the threat within a short period of a year and a half? And it really isn't true. It's too good to be true. It cannot happen that way. You just can't build up forces of 50, 60,000 people without U.S. intelligence and satellite imagery being able to focus on. And in fact, Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki was screaming at the United States government about these depots, big weapons depots that were being built out in the desert in preparation for the attack of ISIS on Iraq. And the U.S. refused to attack them. What really happened was that, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as I can. The globalists have long gone after Iran, which is a real target, because Iran is the first Muslim country that is on the verge of becoming self-sufficient in its own weapons systems. All the other Muslim countries are beholden to either the West or the East for their weapon systems, and therefore they can be cut off at any time. They can be controlled by the fact that they import all their weapons and ammunition. You can't conquer the world, and that's why the Muslim threat is not a real threat, an existential threat to the world, because it doesn't have its own indigenous weapon systems. It can be cut off at any time, and terrorism has never brought down a country and never will. So Iran is the threat, as far as the globalists are concerned, because it's got making its own jet fighters, making its own drones, making its own rockets with the help of North Korea and other things. That's why it has to be taken down. So Israel was tasked with taking that down clear back in 2004, according to some globalist leaks that came out. But they had refused, basically, to go through with the attack on Iran, knowing that Iran would retaliate against Israel through Syria. Syria, being an ally with Iran, had all the rockets, the chemical weapons, the firepower to really annihilate and get past Israel's Iron Dome system. And so that's why the U.S., after starting the Libyan campaign and destroying Libya with a so-called no-fly zone that really was much more, they started to implement a no-fly zone a year and a half over Syria. And they were going to do a stealth invasion of Syria and take out Assad. But at a press conference, John Kerry was asked by a reporter, hey, is there anything Syria can do to stop this imminent invasion of their country? It's very obvious what you're going to do. And Kerry just offhandedly said, well, yeah, they could give up their nuclear or their chemical weapons and we wouldn't be able to attack. And Syria said, we accept. And all of a sudden, in one fell swoop, Kerry's offhanded remarks stopped the globalist agenda. He made a mistake. I can imagine his hammer screaming at him when he got off that stage, you fool, you just ruined everything. And so the U.S. had to create ISIS as an excuse to get back into Syria because they couldn't once Syria was in compliance with this chemical weapons agreement. And so they created ISIS and said they're coming out of Syria, basically what they did. They come in and took half of their support. Remember, the U.S. isn't supporting these guys directly, these jihadists. They're doing it through Bahrain, through Yemen, through Saudi Arabia, through Qatar. They're giving them money and weapon systems. And so they basically built up a separate force of ISIS. And that's why ISIS is a U.S. operation, and that's why all of the airstrikes against ISIS are essentially against empty buildings. They aren't attacking any columns. The proof of that is what happened this weekend in Ramadi. ISIS apparently took over Ramadi. Now they have armored personnel vehicles. ISIS has tanks. You can't get into Ramadi with those things unless you cross the desert. How did they get across the desert without the U.S. interdicting them? Well, the U.S. didn't interdict them. And then after they took Ramadi this week, they had this great big victory parade going down the highway, all exposed to U.S. air power with tanks and NPCs raising their rifles, thousands of soldiers, and the U.S. drones did nothing. What does that tell you? Why isn't the U.S. taking out ISIS? The Iraqi parliament is up in arms because they have members of parliament supporting, giving evidence that they have seen U.S. helicopters flying into ISIS-controlled area and resupplying ISIS. This is evidence you're not going to get in the mainstream news, but I'm telling you, ISIS is a false flag operation in order to justify, one, building an international war against terror, that that Al-Qaeda wasn't doing, and secondly, to have an excuse to get back into Syria. And I think they're going to take down Assad through ISIS itself by continuing to beef up militarily ISIS, drive them out of Iraq. Eventually, they'll congregate into Syria and take down Assad, and then you'll see the U.S. back out of this nuclear agreement with Iran and attack Iran, starting with an Israeli attack. So that's how I think it's going to go down in the Middle East. I don't think it'll start World War III because Russia will not defend Iran against a U.S. attack any more than they defended Iraq against a U.S. attack. They learn more by eavesdropping on our military operations in preparation for World War III than they would by directly attacking or tangling with the U.S. too early.
Well, as we always end every show when I have you on, I'd love to have you tell the folks what they can do now in the next 3 minutes to prepare and what they can do to make themselves self-reliant, because self-reliant Americans, that's what we're all about, or at least that's what we should be all about. And I think it makes us free people when we are self-reliant. So if you could kind of go down that road a little bit for me, and I know the listeners will probably be taking notes.
Well, in the first place, I think I can assure them that we are going to get attacked for the first time in history in America. There will be nuclear weapons. They won't attack cities. They're going to attack military facilities and try to blackmail the West into submission. So you need to be prepared, first of all, to survive the war. You've got to be prepared against fallout. If you're in a blast zone, if your people are listening in Seattle, they need to eventually relocate strategically. And that's why I recommend, you know, Western Washington, away from Fairchild Air Force Base. Spokane area is pretty good. But everything is potentially downwind, so people need to prepare against fallout. And it's not that expensive to do so. They need to be self-sufficient with generators, with their own electricity, with food supplies, with water supplies, because this nuclear attack will be preceded by an EMP strike by Russia and China that'll take down the grid. I don't think it's coming up for 6 weeks to 6 months, and maybe then only in portions. And so you need to be prepared, you know, to be away from social unrest and the pillaging which will occur. I've written several books on the subject of preparedness, and people can find those on my website, joelskousen.com. Skousen is spelled S-K-O-U-S-E-N. And you can get there from worldaffairsbrief.com as well.
Joel Skousen, thank you very much for joining me once again on Patriot Radio. It's always a pleasure, sir. Keep up the great work, and really appreciate everything you're doing in the fight for freedom here in America.
And thank you, Matt.
Well, you heard that, Joel Skousen, and a great take on Jade Helm, and kind of an admonishment, I think, to all of us that we need to make sure that we have primary source documents, verified information. And even when you do that, you're still going to make mistakes because we're all human beings. But if you at least make the effort, it cuts down all of the disinformation that's out there and prevents us from being tools of disinformation use. And especially on this issue of Jade Helm, very clearly, it doesn't make sense on the training scale about the division, regimental level training off of military bases and military reservations. That clearly doesn't make sense as far as a train-as-you-fight standard if you're going to be deploying overseas. It doesn't really wash. And this is the first time that that's actually happened. That said, the military has operated off of reservations and training areas before in national parks and state parks and other private property. And they do it actually all the time for individual training, squad level training. And a squad is about, depending on how it's set up, 9 to 16 people, 9 to 12 people, just depends on what unit you're in. But you do these individual training because you can do that and train as you fight in these areas because you're training on individual skills and squad level skills. Sometimes they do platoon level maneuvers. That's about, you know, anywhere between 30 to 50 guys. Then they also do company level maneuvers sometimes off, but those are much more rare. Never do you see off of the military reservations a division level exercise. So we can say that should cause us concern. It should cause us concern that they're labeling certain states hostile. But we can't go farther and buy into some of these just kind of outrageous theories about tunnels and all of this stuff. It doesn't make sense. So make sure you're verifying your sources. And if you have any questions about that stuff, check out some of the articles we post on Patriot Radio on Facebook. and it hopefully will point you in the right direction. But even investigate on those articles. And there's actually been a couple articles that have been mostly accurate, but there's been a few inaccuracies in them, and people brought that to our attention. And that makes everybody learn and everybody understand what the truth is, and that's what we're all trying to find out. Also, if you don't subscribe to it, check out, and I have it posted on Facebook right now, at the Patriot Radio Facebook page, check out World Affairs Brief, please. It is a really good newsletter, makes you think. It also wades through all of the disinformation and saves at least me a lot of time from having to wade through mountains of news articles on what is actually true, what's backed up by source, primary source material, and what's not. That's an important thing. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Coins Plus once again for allowing us to broadcast from up here and for everything that Coins Plus does for patriots out there in the Northwest and beyond. Check out Coins Plus if you get a chance up here on North Division at the Clock Tower. And if you take some time, remember to pray for a revival of repentance. And we still live in the greatest country in the world despite the internal evil we're facing. Stay connected. Become part of the Patriot Network of people waking up across the American readout and in the rest of the United States. Take a look at us on Patriot Radio US on Facebook. Like the page. Help us defend life and freedom. And because we're working together, we have successes like we did on yesterday with House Bill 1943 and electronic home monitoring reform, where a whistleblower actually heard about it and heard about the fact that we were listening to people out there and got involved, and that started the whole thing to change the law in Washington State. And then we had the thing in Idaho today where you had some Idaho legislators who rallied because they knew the grassroots was behind them and did the right thing and stood on principle and sent a message to the rest of the country that they're not going to go quietly into the night. This is Matt Shea. Remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.